We'll now take up the case of Spencer versus Luton. Party's ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please come forward.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Sharon Blackford, and I represent the plaintiff, Zoya Spencer, in this matter. May it please the Court, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you. This appeal stems from a dispute about a collapsing rockery. Ms. Spencer's appealed many findings and conclusions that were made by the judge in this case, but today I'd like to focus on just a few of them. I'd like to first discuss four of the factual findings and then move to the conclusion regarding nuisance. Both parties agree on the standard of review for the findings, but I'd like to point out that the standard specifies that deference is only to be given to reasonable inferences made by the judge and to the judge's weighing of reasonable competing inferences. If the inference is not reasonable, no deference should be given. I don't normally go through the standard of review on cases like this, but in this case, because we are dealing with questions, many of them factual in nature, based on factual findings made by the judge, I do want to emphasize that under the substantial evidence standard, this court should not accept the trial court's decisions or give deference to them where they're not reasonable.
Isn't there a presumption that operates in a bench trial that the trial court's findings of fact are presumptively correct? And you need to point to something in the record as to why it's not supported by substantial evidence.
Yes, Your Honor, exactly. Yes, I do agree with that, and that's what I will do now. First, the inference that the rockery was structurally sound and in good condition since the July 2010 repair is not reasonable or supported by substantial evidence, because since that repair, 8 more rocks fell out of the rockery.
That pitch was made to the trial judge. The trial judge weighed the evidence, considered in the context of all the other evidence, and made credibility determinations, right?
The trial judge made credibility determinations and drew inferences from the evidence. And our argument is that those inferences were not reasonable, and that is what makes them eligible for consideration by this court.
Well, stripping it all away, though, it seems as though your brief is challenging the trial court's weighing of that evidence.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
Isn't that clearly within the trial court's discretion as to weigh the evidence and determine what evidence prevails?
Yes, that is within the trial court's discretion, but it still has a duty to do so in a reasonable fashion. And if it does not do so in a reasonable fashion, then its decision is subject to examination by this court. It's not possible for the trial court to rule something like the moon is made of green cheese and have that insulated from review. I'm not saying the trial court here said that the moon is made of green cheese, but the point is that the inferences, the findings made must be reasonable and comport with the evidence. And if they don't, then they need to be overturned. So that's why I have focused on the specific areas in which the trial court's ruling is directly contrary to the only objective, direct evidence presented in the case. A general pattern in the findings that were made in the problems is that the trial court relies on conclusions and indirect evidence, and it's contradicted by the direct evidence in the case, which is objective, like photographic evidence, government surveys that are undisputed.
What do you characterize as a government survey? Because I think you're misusing that word.
Well, the survey was commissioned in 1998 by the previous owner of the Luton property.
The treatise you rely on when it is talking about government surveys, I believe, is talking about when the sections of land were located in the ground in the 19th century by the U.S. government, and has nothing to do with any private survey that's done by a private surveyor, and is therefore completely inapplicable.
While I would characterize that it is still applicable, I think that you can find that it's not applicable and still keep in mind that the survey that was performed was never challenged at trial. The Lutons never claimed that that survey was in any way inaccurate. And the red tape that was strung by my client between the survey markers was also never challenged at trial as inaccurate. So therefore, since that was not assigned error by the Lutons on appeal, it's a verity that the survey markers are accurate and the red tape that was strung between them reflects the property line. There's never been a challenge to that, so it must stand.
Was that the trial court's finding or simply your description of evidence that wasn't challenged?
It's my description of evidence that was not challenged.
Okay, and what case do you have for the proposition that the other party's failure to challenge the evidence is a verity on appeal if it isn't one of the findings by the trial court?
I don't have a case that says that. I don't believe I need a case because if it were eligible for challenge, if it were disagreed, then the trial court is the place to bring that out. If you don't bring it out in the trial court, then on appeal you're left with simple speculation about what the Lutons might have argued if they had wanted to, if they, on a practical level, if it was incorrect.
If we do it a little differently, don't we look in the record to see if there is evidence of facts that would support the findings the trial court made, rather than if there's also some other evidence that would support a contrary conclusion?
You do, yes, of course, that is the accepted standard, Your Honor. However, you do not need to close your eyes to all the evidence because, as the substantial evidence standard reads, it has the word reasonable in there a couple of times. And if the appellate court were able to simply close its eyes to all factual findings that the trial court made.
Your argument boiled down to this, yeah, there's that evidence over here, but there's this uncontroverted evidence over here, and no reasonable person could accept this controverted evidence over this uncontroverted evidence?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. You have your rebuttal time remaining.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Tom Schwanz. I'm the attorney who represented the Lutons both in the lower court and here this morning as well. I think the court hit the head of the nail when it talked about questions about what the trial court found and whether on appeal there is sufficient evidence for you to essentially retry this case. Because for all intents and purposes, that's what Ms. Spencer is requesting that the court do, that the court retry this case. In other words, look at the volumes of testimony that were provided from a variety of witnesses, make credibility calls on this court's part, essentially overruling what Judge Oishi indicated in his findings, and rule in favor of the appellant. And I suggest that this court should not do that, and there's a variety of reasons. One issue, though, I do want to address, and I apologize to both counsel and to the court regarding this issue, and that is the issue of the stipulation. I don't know if the court recalls there was a discussion in the record about whether the parties had stipulated that 220 feet of the Spencer property had actually been taken over, if you will, by the rockery that the Lutons owned. And in my pleadings, I indicated that there was not a written stipulation, that actually the stipulation was reduced to writing. I was incorrect about that. In the clerk's papers at page 101 beginning is a motion in limine that was signed by Judge Oishi. And in the second page
Does
of that motion...
Does your error affect the outcome?
Pardon?
Does your error affect the outcome?
I would argue no.
Why don't you address that rather than spending time describing the error?
Okay. In terms of the outcome, there is no evidence. Well, I shouldn't say there's no evidence. There was disputed evidence at the trial court about whether the rockery had actually moved on to the Spencer property. That evidence was presented by both Mr. Costello, who was a resident, and then by Ms. Spencer. In terms of expert testimony, Mr. Biggerstaff, who was a structural engineer, had no testimony indicating that the rockery had moved in the 2 years that he had observed the rockery, from 2009 to 2011. Mr. Batterman, also a geotechnical engineer, testified that he saw no evidence of the rockery moving. And I think this is essentially the critical issue in this case. Two theories were put forth as to what type of rockery this was. The first theory advanced by Ms. Spencer was that it was a retaining wall. It was structural, and that it held dirt and then the addition that was done in 1998, that it held it from coming onto her property. The second description of the rockery was that it was simply an erosion control rockery, and that was advanced by the Lutons. Testimony from Mr. Batterman, geotechnical engineer, established very clearly that the rockery was on a cut slope, and that the cut slope, looking at both the west side of it, which is in between the two properties, and the north side, indicated that that cut slope was stable. It was not moving. He indicated that this rockery was designed as an erosion control rockery. It continued to maintain as an erosion control rockery, and that it wasn't supporting any of the dirt behind the rockery. In other words, it wasn't keeping that dirt from migrating to the west. And he based that upon a number of reasons. Among those reasons is he talked about the batter of the rockery. Batter is a situation where the rockery leans back towards the direction that it is supposed to be, and in this case, leaning towards the Luton property. That batter was still present. There was no indication of overturning of the rockery, which would be evidence that, in fact, there was migration of the rockery. He saw no evidence of bulging in the rockery, indicating that there were hydrostatic problems. And finally, he saw no evidence of any type of crack at the top of the rockery that would reflect that, in fact, it was moving. One of the issues I suspect that will be raised is the issue of when the rockery was, when the railroad tie was put in and the dirt was put in behind the railroad tie wall, there was an issue about how close was that to the rockery. And the owner at the time indicated he had left about 12 inches or so. In rebuttal to that, Mr. Batterman testified, and one of the exhibits he was looking at showed that, in fact, that distance was 3 to 3.5 feet by his estimate, the same distance that it was when he came out in 2010 for the first time, the same distance when he came out in 2011. So I think the bottom line in this case is that Judge Oishi heard the evidence in this case. He saw the witnesses. He heard the witnesses' testimony. He is in the position, the best position, and by law, really the only position to make calls on the credibility of the witnesses, to make calls on whether the evidence was believable, and whether the two issues that were left at the time of the end of the trial, which is common law trespass and the issue of nuisance, whether the plaintiff met her burden on those issues. And he made the ruling based upon, I believe it's 15 findings of fact and 3 conclusions of law, that she did not. And that should not be disturbed by this court, nor should it be overturned by this court. I think the only other issue that would be left would be the issue of intentional trespass and the issue of statutory trespass, RCW 424-630. Those both were issues that were addressed at what I will call halftime of the case. Judge Oishi dismissed the intentional trespass claim at the end of the plaintiff's case, finding that a volitional act was required in order to find intentional trespass. Court has seen the case law that has been cited, and I would suggest that a volitional act is required. A failure to act is not sufficient for intentional trespass. Certainly that can be for a common law trespass. He also dismissed any claims under RCW 424-630 because they simply weren't pled. And I don't think that issue is up on appeal. I don't think there's any dispute about that. So that leaves us with the issue, was there sufficient evidence established by the plaintiff to prove common law trespass and nuisance? And I can address either one of those, but our position is that the court, again, was in the best position to weigh the evidence, to determine the credibility of the witnesses, and his determination based upon findings of fact which are supported by the testimony of the parties and the witnesses, that his determination should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Your Honors, there are, as opposing counsel has pointed out, areas where this court is appropriately conducting a de novo review, not just a substantial evidence review, and those areas are, as counsel pointed out, primarily the continuing trespass and the nuisance. I would argue that the nuisance is of particular concern because the standard is the interference with unreasonable interference with another's use and enjoyment of the property. And here, I believe that a de novo review shows that that standard was met when there are rocks falling over a period of years onto the property, large rocks, which Ms. Spencer testified were at least 2 feet in length, in width each, when there are repeated entries onto her property where no one asked permission in order to remedy this and rebuild the rockery and take away rocks, when over a period of years her property is repeatedly entered upon and having rocks falling upon it.
Are you suggesting this is evidence of nuisance as a matter of law, or that we should remand for the completion of a trial on the issue of nuisance with the defendant provided the opportunity to respond?
I believe
this
that
was a halftime decision?
No, the nuisance went the distance. It was the intentional continuing trespass ended at the halftime motion. So, no, we would not be asking for that for nuisance, but yes, for intentional trespass. No, I'm simply arguing that a de novo review shows that when this is what's occurring on your property, that is an unreasonable interference with the use and enjoyment of that property, and that that is appropriate for this court's consideration without deference to the trial court.
The de novo component of the review is whether the inference was reasonable?
Yes, I do believe
that's so. That's the only thing that you're saying is subject to de novo review, though, isn't it, with respect to the issues that went the full length of the trial?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. I believe that's the standard. As far as the intentional trespass, the court relied on Bradley versus Asarco, but I believe that it did not apply it correctly because it came to the conclusion, the legal conclusion, that the Asarco-Bradley case requires specifically a volitional act where, as I have pointed out in my opening and reply brief, that is not the conclusion that the Supreme Court drew from that case. It quoted the restatement of torts saying that the failure to essentially abate a condition that you have a responsibility to abate is an intentional willful failure which satisfies the intentional element of the trespass. So that's common sense as well. You can't simply allow something to remain, look at it, do nothing, and then claim that you did not satisfy the volitional act. You made a volitional choice to leave it there. Lutens made a choice to leave it there for a year after they were directly notified about it. There were discussions in 2008 with them, and they did not do anything about it. There were discussions in 2009. They didn't do anything until the summer of 2010. That's even if you don't attribute the knowledge and successor liability from the previous owner, the Robinsons, to them. You can, but you don't even have to in order to find volitional intent on their part to commit the trespass by simply letting the rocks repeatedly fall on her yard. So if the court has no further questions, I'll conclude by asking that there should be a new trial based on the nuisance, and the intentional trespass should be allowed to be completed, so that would be remanded as well. Thank you.
Thank you.